Now I'm eliminating $2,700 a month in income on the rooftop, but I'm getting $700,000 paid up front towards my $2 million down payment. So now I only have to come out of pocket 1.3 million, effectively juicing my returns and IRR and cash on cash by a significant margin. So that's kind of really creative structure of how I was able to make this deal work and make sense of it.
This is your daily real estate syndication show. I'm your host, Whitney Sewell. Thank you for listening to the show. My goal is for you to become a savvy investor by learning from some of the best operators and investors in the business. I'd like to hear from you. If you have questions you would like us to ask on the show, or if you have someone you would like me to interview, please let us know by emailing info@lifebridgecapital.com. Would you please leave us a written rating and review? I would be grateful. Well, do not hesitate to let me know how we can best serve you at LifeBridge Capital. And now for an amazing interview with my friend, Ben Kogut.
This is your daily real estate syndication show, and I'm your host, Ben Kogut, sitting in for Whitney Sewell today. Today, our guest is David Tupin. David is a multifamily real estate syndicator and entrepreneur based in Austin, Texas. He started investing at the age of 20 when he bought his first property while in college. By the age of 28, David has purchased and developed over $120 million in commercial and multifamily real estate as the owner of Tupin Holdings. David is also the founder of the Real Estate Lab, a multifamily acquisitions and asset management software for investors. Today, he shared with us some fascinating best practices for putting a creative deal together. For example, he'll talk to us about how he is under contract to purchase a property that has a cell phone lease on the roof and how he's able to sell that lease in order to be able to reduce his basis in that underlying asset. Super fascinating. He also talked to us about best practices and how he's been able to find so much success before the age of 30. And he also talked to us about the software that he's created and how he's been able to bring in over 150 other companies who are using the software to improve their asset management. David, welcome.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. It's always good to catch up.
My pleasure. Yeah. Give us a 90-second on your background and your involvement in real estate syndication.
Yeah. So I guess a little bit of the interesting part of my story, I just started very young in this business. Bought my first property when I was 20, going on 21 years old, a little 12 unit deal. And I'm 28 now. So I've been doing it for about 7, 8 years, almost 1500 apartments, couple self storage facilities, some mixed use commercial. We do a lot of joint ventures, couple syndications. I've gone full cycle on 13 deals to date, I believe. And I'd say we do almost everything in-house, except for we don't manage quite everything. We manage some of our stuff. But yeah, it's been great. I live and breathe real estate, diehard entrepreneur, started a software company as well 2 years ago, also in the multifamily industry. And both of those businesses keep me very busy. So just happy to be here and share a little bit about what I do.
Amazing, David. So impressive that you've started at such a young age and have accomplished so much. It's really, really incredible. And so what, you know, where did you learn all this? How did you get your start on all this? I mean, was it just kind of grit and hard work? Did you have mentors? Or did you take any, you know, mentorship classes, or like what was it?
Yeah, I'd say it's a little bit of both. I certainly had mentors along the way, had people I learned from, you know, YouTube, books, all that type of stuff. I joined some masterminds. But really, at the end of the day, I attribute most of it to just, you know, not being afraid to jump in and get my hands a little dirty and fail along the way. And I learned a lot from that. You know, I put my first deal under contract without having pretty much any conversations around raising equity. And so, you know, it's like get the first deal locked up. Now figure out the money, figure out the bank, figure out that type of stuff. So, you know, for example, I was on my third deal. I didn't even know what agency financing was. And I was like 2 weeks into due diligence when I found a website that spoke about Freddie Mac financing. And you know, again, I didn't have anyone kind of tell me that that was even a thing. I just found it online and connected with a company called Hunt Financing. And And so, you know, I got my first Freddie Mac loan done at that point. So it's stuff like that, that it's just kind of trial by fire and figuring it out along the way.
Amazing. And I know that you've done some pretty creative deals, and maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, man, I've done a lot of different types of projects, from like light value adds. I'm sitting today doing this interview with you from a project that I completely gut renovated. These townhomes, about 100,000 a unit in renovation. So, you know, and kind of everything in between. A lot of different, I'd say, creative type deals. One I'm working on right now is pretty interesting. It's a 45 unit, 7-story building in San Antonio. We're closing on this in about a month and a half. And there is a telecom lease with AT&T on the rooftop. It's a tall building, right? So a lot of times these telecom companies will want to put a cell tower or something on the roof and utilize the space, and they pay you for that. Well, there's companies that are not AT&T, but other privately held companies that want to earn that income from AT&T and have access to your rooftop to put additional leases up there. So I go into contract on this deal. I knew this up front as well, but found a company that was willing to pay me for this $2,700 a month lease. They're paying me $700,000 simultaneously at closing to buy that lease from me. So what's kind of cool is my equity to do the deal originally was $2 million. This is what I needed to raise. Now I'm eliminating $2,700 a month in income on the rooftop, but I'm getting $700,000 paid up front towards my $2 million down payment. So now I only have to come out of pocket $1.3 million, effectively juicing my returns and IRR and cash on cash by a significant margin. So that's kind of really creative structure of how I was able to make this deal work and make sense of it. And, you know, we're always looking for things like that, you know, to find deals that maybe other people might pass on and turn them into a big win.
So if I'm hearing you right, they took that $2,700. My rough math is it's like a 4.6 cap or something for that rooftop, and you're bifurcating the roof from which is a lease. So you're not even selling them the fee simple real estate. You're just selling them basically a lease that's to the telecom group. Correct. And then you're using that as equity to go into the actual real estate that's below the roof and lowering your down payment significantly. Yeah, it's super, super creative.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Yeah. So there it's technically the legal instrument is it's an easement. It's like a rooftop easement. And then what we do is there's an agreement between them and the lender, kind of a subordination agreement that separates it from the real estate itself. So, you know, the sell lease will now be technically property of, you know, this other company for kind of the easiest way to explain it. So, for example, if like the property ever got foreclosed on or I sold it, that lease is completely separate. It's now property of that telecom company. Mm-hmm. They will also attempt to put, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Carry on.
I was going to say that same company that's buying this is also going to attempt to put additional leases on that rooftop. So we're talking like Dish Network, a couple other groups. You know, they'll lease space up there for $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 a month, and we then have a profit share on future leases. So I do have a chance to actually continue to earn a portion of income of any additional leases they put on it going forward. So
very, very nice. So not yeah, if they are able to increase their revenue, you'll get a piece of that, is what you're saying.
Exactly. 100%. Nice. So instead of buying it for $77 a door, I'm looking at it as like I'm buying it for, you know, around $2.8 million now, like you know, $62 a door. Mm-hmm. So
mm-hmm. How do you find deals like this?
This deal was on market for 2 years, and an old gentleman owned the property. And he wanted, to my knowledge, he wanted like $5 or $6 million for the longest time. His kids ended up, I think he's in his 90s. His kids ended up taking over kind of the trust and the estate, you know, as he got older. And this happened in the last 6 months. And I had offered on it beforehand, like low $3 million. I came back to the deal 9 months later. Again, I've been sitting on the market, They'd been turning down any offer up to $4 million. They didn't want to even look at it. And then the kids get involved. I make an offer at the right time, and they accept an offer at $3.5 million. So it's just a timing thing. You know, somebody else maybe could have gotten in there a month or two later and gotten a deal, but I followed up at the right time, and it kind of worked out perfectly.
Timing is everything. And what are you seeing in the market going forward? We're in March of 2024. What does your crystal ball think is going to happen going forward?
I think it's going to be slow. I mean, I'm an eternal optimist, but I do think this year is going to be a really slow year. I think a lot of deals are starting to go back to the bank. They have already been. I believe Q2 and Q3 of 2024 are two quarters where groups are struggling to hang on to their last bits of reserves, and deals that were done in 2021, 22 that were maybe overpaid for and underfunded are kind of coming to that point where, you know, these floating rates have just maintained and you know, you can't blame some of these groups, honestly, because, like, you know, first of all, who would have expected it? Rate caps are coming off, payments are going up, and it's just happening. So I think that's going to happen a lot. Some lenders, like, actually, I heard recently Arbor is starting their own asset management division and taking some of these deals back and not selling them. So that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Rates, I would hope rates start to kind of trend down towards the end of this year, but I think the Fed is too scared to do that and see things kind of explode again to drop them anytime in the next like 3 to 6 months, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So got it. Yeah. Great analysis there. I don't disagree with you, and definitely seeing a lot of properties going back to the lenders, and it makes a lot of sense for some of them if they have the resources and the desire that to hold on to them and get them at that lower basis and kind of
I was just gonna say, what are you seeing on the commercial side as opposed to multifamily, maybe? Because commercial has, I would say it's very obviously niche specific, right? Depends what type of commercial, but commercial in general has slowed down a lot, especially office, right? Some retail over the last 5 years. Have you seen as much of a kind of decline in the last 12 months as we have in multifamily? Because
not nearly as drastic as multifamily. Yeah. Yeah. These deals are, so I'm a retail triple net guy. And so the shopping centers and single tenant net lease deals are still, we're still able to get financing, albeit at a lower LTV, but typically we're locking in 10-year fixed rate. And so we're not seeing that kind of decline like what's being occurring in multifamily. Plus, we're starting at higher cap rates as well. Mm-hmm. So there's just less competition, and so that it just gives you a lot more breathing room for if and when rates do shift unfavorably. And so there's less transacting, but the valuations are still holding like pretty darn close to where they used to be.
Okay. Yeah. Probably just cap rates have gone up a little bit based on interest rates. But other than that, mm-hmm. I would assume more stable, whereas multifamily just spiked like crazy and people were buying deals at just prices that made zero sense, you know? So off of pro forma. Yeah. So interesting times.
Let's pivot a little bit and talk about your real estate lab, because I think that is something that I know you put a lot of energy into that, and share with the audience about what's going on there.
So I built a spreadsheet kind of starting back 7 years ago. It evolved over time, started selling the spreadsheet as a syndication kind of model, and a lot of people loved using it. So long story short, I ended up starting a software company, and we built a desktop web application for tracking all of your deals, looking at public records for properties, underwriting deals. We have a ton of different models you can choose from: development models, storage models, multifamily models, et cetera. And you basically use it as kind of like your hub for all the deals you're looking at, all the deals you own. Underwriting, you can store all your documents. I mean, it's like people really don't have a central place for that normally. They'll use like a Dropbox maybe or Google Drive And then you've got, you know, you've got a platform maybe to manage your investors. You got like a Syndication Pro or Juniper, but nobody's got like a deal side software unless they modify maybe like a CRM for that. So that's what ours is. And you can upload rent rolls, T12s, pull the data out of them, put it directly in your model. We do a little bit of predictive analysis on your operating expenses and auto populate those. And as of last week, we have a brand new feature where you can pull all of your multifamily rent comps directly from our software. So we provide national data on, you know, rental comparables and help you, you know, kind of suggest what your rents should be and show you comparable properties nearby and their rates per square foot and all that type of stuff. So you can make decisions directly within our software platform. So it's cool. You know, I'm not a tech guy. I have no tech background. It's been super interesting. I've poured a ton of money into building it out because really I built it kind of for me at first. I use it every single day. And we just kind of take feedback from our users and our community now. But we're up in the last year. We started selling it like April of 23. When we started, we've got about 150 companies utilizing it now and growing every single month. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's like a homegrown software, but it's come a long way. And it's, I think it's really cool and transformational, I think, for people's businesses that don't have those systems or are doing a lot of deals and want to speed up the process. Like we're that software for them.
Amazing. Have you all tapped into AI in any of this process?
We utilize AI for the rent comps. Identifying it's a part of the equation to identify similar properties, utilizing photos of the subject property will determine if they have similar build quality amenities, if they are a comp or not. AI helps us kind of determine that. That's a part of it. Other than that, and it's just a lot of very typical, you know, good old fashioned data and whatnot. So
nice. Let's pivot to the syndication side and raising capital, and maybe you could share with us a little bit about what your strategies have been in that department.
Yeah, I can't say I've got any like secret sauce to capital raising. I've been doing it for the whole 7 years I've been in this, and I think to date, a little over $20 million has been raised in capital on house. Mm-hmm. I tend to not do any co-GPs. I think out of all of our 23 deals, 22 have been all in-house capital raised. And I really just do like relationship-based capital raising. So I've got a lot of investors on a list. And anytime I meet somebody new, I put them on the list. I keep them informed with emails. And then I have kind of my select list of people I know with larger check amounts. I literally keep it in my notes app on my iPhone. And when I get a deal, I just call them up and I tell them, hey, I've got a deal. And these are people that have, you know, 250 to 5 million. And typically that's how I raise the capital. I'll send an email out and I'll start hitting up my contacts. And, you know, within 30 days, we'll raise the, you know, our raise is normally like 1.5 million to 4 million, not huge raises. I stick in that sub $10 million deal size. So I would say it's a secret sauce. We use Juniper Square to manage all that. I think communication is key with investors. That's something that we definitely like to stay focused on. It's just good communication and reporting. And it's all relationship based. You can't force somebody into investing in a deal. You can't hard sell an investor. It's really just presenting a project the right way, telling a good story around it. And normally the story sells the deal more than the numbers, more than anything else. You know, I could show a deal at a 16 IRR projected. I could show one at a 25 IRR. But if I've got a great story around the lower return one, I mean, sometimes it doesn't matter. People invest sometimes based on that, you know, emotion. And, you know, it's our job to obviously make sure we're putting deals in front of them responsibly at the end of the day. Because most of the time, they don't know the numbers. They don't underwrite the deal themselves, right? They're investing in you and the story. So. So just responsible capital raising, I think, is important, and not lost a dollar to date, and have performed on every deal, knock on wood. you know.
Congrats on that. Congrats on that, brother. Yeah, and speaking of, touch on the Real Estate Jedi, which is your Instagram handle. What, how has social media played a role in your business? And how many followers do you have?
I think something like the 90,000 range on That's Instagram. Impressive. Yeah, over the last 6-7 years, I post a lot. I promote a lot of posts, ad wise, which I think really helps a lot too. So spending money on it has helped, for the different events we throw and just that. And then my biggest has been word of mouth, I think. Just from when I started really young, I did a lot of podcasts like these. And it's helped a lot. I've connected with a ton of investors. Say a majority of my investors have come from word of mouth referrals through social media. I just talk about and I post about deals that I'm doing and I just naturally just it that's just the beauty of social media. Just naturally you get people that gravitate towards you that either want to invest or participate or bring deals. I've had probably two or three deals I've done that have been 7-figure plus profits. That were just people through social media that brought a deal and, didn't know how to buy it, but they found it and I bought it with them, So it is a beautiful thing. You love it and hate it too at times, right? Social media, it is a job in itself. And I don't love putting myself out there too much in terms of like private life and everything. So it is one of those things that you got to kind of, treat it like a business a little bit. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing all that and congrats on your success with all that. Let's pivot again. What would you say has been the number one thing that's contributed to your success?
It's hours, man. It's the grit. Yeah, seriously. It is time in the game. I believe that you can create success by outworking, everyone else. And not that it's a competition, but my first 3 years in the business was 100-hour weeks every single week. It was extremely difficult, but, people ask, how did you do it at a young age? That's how I kind of overcame that with having no contacts and no knowledge of the business. I had to put in extra time to kind of learn that. So, I'd say for anyone else, like what's the secret? If you want to build any successful business, you got to work harder than everybody else. That's just the truth. And it's a cheesy kind of loaded answer, but it is just the truth, right? You're going to be the best in the business by putting the most time into it.
Sure. Sure. Well, hard work, absolutely paying off for you, brother. That's amazing. Yeah. And how do you like to give back?
I like teaching people. I mean, as many people as I can get into this business and teach them how to do it. I think it's cool. I had people teach me along the way. And so that's why I come on and we'll do these podcasts and hopefully it inspires somebody to, to quit their job and jump into it or whatever it may be, or spark a new idea. I mean, especially other young people, I'm passionate about that. Very passionate about that. Just getting other people to kind of open their eyes and see you don't just have to do single family or, you can jump in and buy multimillion-dollar deals if you are persistent and you put that effort in. It's doable.
Amazing. Well, it's super inspiring to hear your story and appreciate you giving back here to us here on the show. And so if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, Instagram, Real Estate Jedi. You can go on my website, www.realestatelab.com. Be a great way to learn about our software. But Instagram is probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Amazing. All right. Well, thanks again, David, for coming on the show. And
thank you for being with us again today. I hope that you have learned a lot from the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I hope you're telling your friends about the Real Estate Syndication Show and how they can also build wealth in real estate. You can also go to lifebridgecapital.com and start investing today.